I'm Dorothy Wickenden, and on today's Politics and More podcast, New Yorker editor David Remnick visits the Whitney Museum of American Art with the filmmaker and journalist Laura Poitras. Her newest project, Astro Noise, is an installation currently on exhibition at the Whitney.
Filmmaker and journalist Laura Poitras is arguably the fiercest and most vivid chronicler and critic of the War on Terror. When Edward Snowden copied countless NSA files about surveillance and he wanted to leak them to the press, he reached out to Laura Poitras. The stories that followed led to a Pulitzer Prize that Poitras shared with journalists at The Guardian and The Washington Post, and her documentary film about Snowden, Citizen Four, won an Academy Award. But her newest project is quite a different thing. It's a museum exhibit installed in a series of mostly dark spaces at the Whitney Museum of American Art. It uses video and images, classified government documents, and sound to tell a story about post-9/11 America and the War on Terror. But it's not at all what you'd think of as a documentary.
I mean, all my work is about trying to use visual vocabulary to understand the world that we live in and to say something about it. I mean, as an artist, just to express, like a writer expresses through words, I express through images. And this is a way to work in a bit more abstract way. Working with images, working more abstractly, I think can get at different types of connecting to people and emotions.
The exhibit is called Astro Noise, which was Edward Snowden's name for one of the encrypted NSA files he shared with her more than 2 years ago. I visited Laura Poitras at the Whitney Museum as she and curator Jay Sanders were supervising the finishing touches.
Okay.
So this piece has a screen that hangs in the center, and we're projecting on both sides. And this is material that I filmed at Ground Zero right after
the attack.
Oh, say, can you see?
Laura, in a sense, there's a narrative here.
Right. So there's a double-sided projection, and both images on both sides recorded in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. One side I filmed, which was I went down to Ground Zero and filmed people gathering there, and on the other side is a military interrogation that was conducted in November 2001. And so they're on the. So you enter and you see one image, and then there's a screen hanging in the middle of the room, and then the other image is on the other side.
And you went down to Ground Zero in the same spirit as any writer or artist would go as just to pay witness. You had nothing political in mind or even artistic in mind, I was assuming, at that moment.
I definitely had something artistic, like I was drawn to document, but the images are not actually of the World Trade Center site. They're actually people looking at it. So it's an extended reaction shot. It's just showing faces. And that was a way to kind of capture something that's impossible to capture through looking at the faces.
How do you mean?
And, I mean, representations, you know, at some point fail. Like you can't. You can't comprehend that kind of loss or that kind of tragedy. It's actually very hard to represent. And you need the other ways to get in. And so by looking in the other direction, by looking at people who are trying to process and trying to make sense of what had happened, and this was in the real immediate aftermath. This was before we started the war in Afghanistan. So this was in the really initial weeks. And so I think you learn a lot from these faces. I'm really interested in the faces trying to comprehend something that's incomprehensible.
We walk into a room, and projected on the ceiling is a night sky, and if you know anything about the architecture of the world, you immediately see these buildings, and it's pretty clearly Sana'a, the capital of Yemen. Tell me about when this was shot, and you meant to, I think, really lie on your back, and there's a kind of platform, and you look up into the sky, and there's rather ominous music that goes with it, but it's not overbearing by any stretch of the imagination, and you're meant to be in this sky almost and feel this, that you're right there.
The idea being to imagine living in places in the world where there are drones flying overhead and drones that potentially could kill you. And it's not just filmed in Yemen. We filmed in in Yemen, Somalia, and Pakistan, and in the United States. We filmed at Creech Air Force Base, where they test drones. So there are drone images that come in at the end of the film before it loops around.
What we're hearing, from the night sky of Yemen and elsewhere around the world, where drones play an enormous role. What's coming into our ears? What are the various parts of the sound design?
So this is a collaboration. So I mean, there are many pieces in the show that I've made in collaboration with other people, and so this is a collaboration with a sound designer, Jeff Bryant. And what he's doing is, so it never repeats itself. There's crossfading of sounds of drones that are being crossfaded and being. You're in a room that's in a cube, and it's a 3D soundscape, and so we have eight. Different speakers, and both the audios are constantly being randomly, the fades are randomized, and then the movement of the drones is being randomized. There are certain things that are locked, they're cued to picture, and that's the sound of the pilots, or the sound of some ambient noise that's synced to picture. So the idea is being it's sort of like an organic piece that's constantly changing, that's never the same. If you were to go in at any time of the day, you would never hear the same thing. The images would repeat, but you'd never hear the same thing.
So Citizen 4, in a way, is a complex but very simple narrative. It's you're contacted by Ed Snowden. You make your way to Hong Kong. You're in this incredibly claustrophobic hotel room. He's literally in bed, like Colette or something. And he's telling you his story, and he's guiding you through endless documents, and he's very concerned about the way this will come out and it unfolds, and then we see it all come out. That's the through line. Those are the materials. That's the visual material, the audio material. Here you're working with classified documents as your paints, as your video, as your artistic material. Tell us a little bit about that. Is it the first time that classified documents have been used as materials of art?
It isn't the first time, but it is an unusual set of circumstances that I work both journalism and visual art. Mm-hmm. And so after meeting Snowden in Hong Kong, I went back to Berlin and really felt an obligation that I had to work on news reporting, that this was mm-hmm. newsworthy information and that I had an obligation to report. But I really consider myself a visual storyteller, visual filmmaker, and a visual journalist. And so when we were thinking about the show, I shifted my approach to looking at the materials and at the archive from into more of a visual perspective. And that's how a lot of these, some of the pieces in the show have emerged. So there's one piece that's called Anarchist, which my colleagues, Henrik Moltke and Cora Courier at The Intercept just reported on. And it's looking at a program where GCHQ hacks into the drone feeds.
The British Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, and is hacking into different signals, including drone feeds, Israeli drone feeds. But what's interesting about that for me is that it's a very visual images.
What are we seeing?
So you see different things. You see signals that are being that are being intercepted and processed and decrypted and descrambled by intelligence agencies. And in some cases, you're seeing the end result of a decryption. So you'll see an actual, for instance, a drone, an Israeli drone. Mm-hmm. And so it was a different perspective of how to approach the archive to get at questions of mass surveillance and a hidden state.
Now, are you concerned about aestheticizing the horror or journalism or whatever it is you're trying to get at? In other words, we're not looking at a Vermeer painting here. We're not looking even at a video landscape that's meant to be beautiful as such. We're meant to be doing
It's the opposite. I think it's the opposite. I mean, I hope it's the opposite, because what I'm trying to do is make people not numb to information. So to reach people in a different type of a way, to actually move them more, and not to gloss over or to aestheticize. And it's actually how do you get at different types of content? How do you get at issues of war, of torture?
On the ceiling by those chains, onto my feet used to hang over the floor.
We walk into the next room, and there's a series of, this is a much larger, narrower room, there are a series of slits, as if you're looking through a prison door into someone's cell, and we see someone testifying. Tell us about the person testifying.
So there's an interview with Murat Kurnaz, who was he was a prisoner in Kandahar in Guantanamo, and was tortured. And he's talking about being tortured in Kandahar. So it was an interview that I filmed with him after he was released from Guantanamo. And then underneath that, there are drawings of I don't know. Did you look underneath?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Good. And so those are confinement boxes and
just
a waterboard.
Like a pencil sketch.
Yeah, those are drafted by a former prisoner.
Yes. And so one of the things that I found obscure that I couldn't quite tell what it was again, we're looking through into this as if through a glass darkly into the glimpses of the deep state, as you're putting it, of cement being spread. As if to create a floor or a wall, or what's happening there?
You know what? I'm not going to translate everything. You know, I'm just in terms of the work.
But that image doesn't pay off. I don't know whether cells being created or a prison or the road to Valhalla. I just don't know.
Well, that sounds like a payoff to me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
In May 2004, I traveled to Baghdad to make a film about the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
At a certain point in the exhibition, your voice is heard.
After returning to the United States, I was placed on a government watch list and detained and searched every time I crossed the U.S. border. It took me 10 years to find out why. In 2015, I filed a lawsuit against the government to obtain my files. The documents reveal I was the target of a classified national security investigation conducted by the FBI and undisclosed intelligence agencies.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I filed a lawsuit, a FOIA lawsuit, with the help of EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, to obtain my FBI files. And in October, I started getting redacted files back. And the FOIA case is ongoing, so I haven't received everything. But there is several that I'm publishing or including as part of the exhibition. And they're actually, for me, it was pretty shocking to see the extent to which, it was pretty shocking to see that there was a grand jury
and
that the kind of subpoena.
And this in particular is about your experience as a filmmaker in Iraq.
Well, the point of the piece, so what I've done in the piece is that I'm showing 8 minutes of unedited footage. And that unedited footage is shown, continuously on a monitor, and then it presents these FBI documents that presents a certain narrative. And what I'm trying to do with this piece is present information that the government actually never asked to see. I mean, if you look at these documents, they make a lot of assumptions of what it means to be on a roof, and it seems that I'm just filming kids and a family mm-hmm. on a roof. And so I'm bringing forward that footage in juxtaposition with these FBI files.
There are aspects of the exhibition that dramatize in one's own experience of going through the exhibition of the surveillance state, as if you're again intent on making sure that we don't get too comfortable with this, that we're walking through a surveillance state all the time.
Yeah,
that's part of the point. Very much being driven home. And at the end, toward the end of the exhibition, we reach a point, there's a screen, and from what I can tell, again, I'm not very sophisticated in this, it seems to be our phones are being read by something.
It's showing you what your phone is broadcasting, what your phone is looking for, what networks
right
is
up
trying
on
to
a screen.
Connect. And the idea, and it goes back to your question at the beginning, like why do I work in museum, or what's the point of it? It's actually to make you think about it in a different kind of a way, to trigger something else. So to sort of show the viewer that actually they're broadcasting something that reveals, a lot about them. And to do that in a way that's not just, using text to say, we know there's surveillance or certain things we know, but to just how do you get at issues different kind of way.
Laura, I can't help asking you, maybe you won't answer, but we're meeting on the morning after the Iowa caucuses. Real politics are taking place at a national level. You're shaking your head no already, and you're shrugging. The work you've done, the work you continue to do, has had an enormous effect, and yet I haven't heard a single presidential debate, Republican, Democratic, or otherwise, that has encountered any of these issues head on. What hope do you have politically for the work that you're concerned about, for the issues that you're concerned about?
I mean, the hope that you have, I mean, so I lived in Berlin, and that's a country with a very dark history. And it happens to currently be a country that is very protective of privacy because of its history. And so we create the political landscape in which we live, and we can change that landscape.
Laura, thank you.
Thanks.
That was David Remnick talking with Laura Poitras.